Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. Good to be back. I believe we're all back this week. I say I believe. Tom's having a few technical difficulties, and hopefully will join us very shortly. But in the meantime, the other two of us idiots will hold down the fort. Okay, so we're talking NXT for November 9th, 2021. 8 matches, once again, that is the normal number in this era of NXT is 8, although we have seen 9. But yes, 8 matches and one good one. I don't know, maybe a couple that were okay, but your main event, which we will open with, was far and away the best of them. Pete Dunne versus Carmelo Hayes. This is non-title. A few months ago, a champion winning on NXT was not really a thing. Maybe in a tag or something like that, but not in singles. So that is what happened. Carmelo Hayes, your North American champion, loses to Pete Dunne in a match with all kinds of distraction on both sides. You've got Trick Williams. You had Dexter Lumis sitting in on commentary, never saying anything, of course, but putting on a helmet. Funny, but he has done it before. I was just telling somebody about this a couple of days ago. Hadn't thought about it in months, but brought it up to somebody a couple of days ago. Strange stuff, but yeah, did that. And in the end, it was Johnny Gargano who cost Carmelo Hayes the win, and they did end with a kind of intriguing issue wherein Gargano and Dunne both are trying to lay claim to a title shot. So there you go, Gargano, Dunne, Hayes, all in that North American championship picture, Nate.
Okay, so for the second week in a row, Sling TV did me dirty. It did me dirty. Last week, I wasn't able to see the opening, 15 minutes of the show. Tonight, I was a little bit behind, and I was watching on a delay, and I missed, the last maybe 7 minutes of the show. So I read your report, Kelly, to catch up. So that being said, I'm actually really intrigued for this. Pete Dunne, Johnny Gargano, they represent the old school, the old blood, the black and gold NXT, if you will. Whereas Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, for that matter, obviously they represent this new 2.0 school of talent. And which is obviously the theme we're seeing throughout NXT 2.0 quite a bit, old versus new. We're seeing that here again, in this main event and throughout this feud. But I'm curious to see, how this kind of plays out. Will Pete Dunne have anybody watching his back? He doesn't have Oney Lorcan anymore watching him. As far as I know, Danny Burch is still employed, but he's on the injured list. And Ridge Holland, did he get Future Endeavored or is he on SmackDown? I don't even know who's part of the company anymore with everything going on. But regardless, Pete Dunne's kind of on his own. We've got Dexter Lumis and Johnny Gargano's corner, and obviously Trick Williams with Carmelo Hayes. So, there's a lot of interference, and it sounds like there was a lot of interference here in the main event tonight. But there's a lot of potential for interference, rather, is what I was trying to say, for that upcoming feud. Whether it leads into some sort of a triple threat match at the announced War Games, not TakeOver, but I guess they've been calling it War Games, just War Games for a couple of years, at least a couple of years, whatever. But at War Games, if it leads to triple threat there for the North American title, that'd be kind of cool. But I think if it does lead to triple threat, or if it just leads to singles between one of the two of them and Carmelo Hayes, I think either one of them would be a great opponent for him to get started. Again, like I said, both Dunne and Gargano, they really represent NXT old school. So you don't, I wouldn't think Carmelo Hayes would be losing his title right off the bat here. I believe he's probably going to have at least a halfway decent title reign, a decent lengthy reign. So, you know, put him out there against somebody like Dunn or even like Gargano that has that credibility, that has that association with that NXT black and gold brand, and let Carmella go over, let him win and, you know, obviously retain his title, but get that rub from the older talent. I think it's some good booking. From what I saw of the match, I thought it was fantastic. I'm going to go back probably tomorrow morning and at some point and watch. Corbin's dreaming in the background. That's interesting. But I do want to go back tomorrow and watch it. But from what I saw, it looked great. It looked like they had some great chemistry. And, you know, looking forward to seeing where the rest of this feud goes.
Tom, do we have you back?
Tom is not on the call yet. Tom's computer was kind of bugging out, and his mic wasn't working. So he's not on the call yet, but he's supposed to be here at some point.
Well, okie dokie. I got me, I got you, I've got a dreaming dog, and I guess that's what is going to have to pass for a show this week. Let's go to the phone lines. You can call us 515-605-9345 and say hey, folks, and we'll give you a couple of questions. Let us go to our good friend in Georgia, Darrell. Darrell, how are you tonight?
I'm doing quite well. How y'all doing tonight?
Not too bad. Glad to be back. Thought we were back on a three-man booth, but that will remain to be seen.
We all know technical issues happen all the time, But it was a good show tonight. It was a good show. It was a lot of things that I liked. That main event I really did like. I like how they set up a lot of things. I like that they introduced, said that they finally going to have a takeover, which is War Games, which we talked about like a few weeks ago because it's around about this time. But my first question to be is the story that they telling with Bron Breakker and how they building him up. I'm enjoying this build with Bron Breakker. I wish they would build that up with a bunch of different people like this and did similar ways with these people. Because the story that they telling and they make you want to see him, you know, continue to go. Continue to do different things, you know, continue to just because you investing in his growth and seeing can he work his way back up. He don't have to get a title shot, especially not at the takeover, but I would love to see how he goes. Would you guys prefer to see him like in a different feud maybe where he have to take a loss and see how he come back from it and build up and just keep his momentum and going and everything? Or what would you guys like to see? Or see him go right back for the title?
So we got Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa both off in the UK doing tours there. So not a bad thing. There's a lot of talent to get over on this show right now. So you got these two guys in the UK working in front of a different bunch of people. Probably very cool for them to see Tommaso Ciampa. I would assume it's been a very long time since he's been over there, and it's probably the first time that Braun's been over there in this capacity. But that's an interesting question. I guess I wouldn't have bet on Braun staying in the championship picture right away, but there's nobody else in it. Like, there doesn't seem to be anybody else in the title picture right now. It's just Braun. So strange stuff there, surprising stuff there to me. I'm not against this, but if he loses again, then they're going to have to, obviously they would have to. You can't just keep him there for loss after loss after loss without losing people. But he obviously had a very, very good showing in that championship match. And I think in every way, in kayfabe and as a worker. So I think that it's warranted to have him go out there for a second match in this feud. But how – I wouldn't be surprised if the decision hadn't been made on who's going to win this match. Is Braun ready? Is that – that's going to be the big question a lot in NXT. And at the beginning of NXT, what we're covering, Tom and I in NXT 1.0 are – not really, but, you know, NXT 8 years back, is you had to give the championship to somebody who was unseasoned because nobody seasoned was on the roster. That's just not what was done. It was all new talent. So you had to have an immense amount of trust in one of these young talents. But you also didn't have to compare them to seasoned talent. So it's a brave new world out there. I'm probably saying a lot of words to get out of really making a decision. So let me just kind of throw to Nate.
I mean, I can say a lot of words if you want to. That's cool. I'm more or less really in the same camp that you are. Cause like, I like Bron Breakker, except for the name. I think the name's abysmal and I'm going to point that out every single time. Hey, hi, Tom. Tom's here now.
Am I here?
You are.
Ooh, you paused awkwardly, so that must mean you can hear me. Okay, good.
I can hear you.
Thanks, system update. Good timing.
Oh, God, gotta love that. Bane of my existence as a sysadmin. Anyway, I like Bron Breakker, except for that abysmal name. And I think he has a lot of upside, and I think he has a lot of potential. But that's really my question right now. Is he ready for the NXT championship? And it's weird because, like, Kelly, you said you weren't expecting to see him in the championship picture right now. And honestly, I kind of was. I kind of have been expecting to see this after he lost. But he's shown that I think it was the following week after he lost. I mean, he immediately just jumped right back in, said that he wanted to get back in the title scene, wanted to get that title. And it seems like since he's debuted, they've just pushed him to the moon. As Darrell said, I wish that they would do things like this more. They would kind of put some more focus on other talent, not just the one person that they want to make like the guy, if you will. But the way they showcased Bron Breakker tonight in those segments is just those little clips of him at those house shows in the UK, with the voiceover talking about how like he's getting some tips from the main roster talent, all of that stuff right there. Like he's getting rubs Raw SmackDown on NXT. Nobody's getting rubs Raw SmackDown on NXT, but he's getting rubs Raw SmackDown. Clearly they have some big things for him. I'm fine with it because I think he's got a great upside. He's a fantastic talent. But again, it's still for me anyway. It's too soon to know. It's too soon for me to really make a decision on whether he's ready to actually hold that title or not. I feel like if they did it, even in a month at War Games, it feels. I hate to use that term hotshotting because it gets thrown around so much, but it almost in a way kind of feels like they are hotshotting him. He just debuted his first match. His first feud, he wins the NXT championship. That's like a Brock Lesnar push right there, So it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of pans out. I wouldn't be surprised either if, like you said, Kelly, if they don't have any idea if they want to go with Ciampa or if they want to go with Breakker. They might want to just kind of wait and see how this pans out. They may have wanted to see how he performed on those UK tours as well, kind of using that as a bit of a litmus test for him. So those are all kind of obviously speculation, but wouldn't surprise me if that was kind of part of it. But I've flapped my gums for a while. Tom, welcome to the show.
Tom, we're talking to Darrell, and he is really liking the build of Bron Breakker and how he's stayed in this feud and just the continued slower build for him. And it was wishing that we could see something like this for more of the talent. And so it's just kind of a general question about what you think of the build of Bron Breakker. In addition, we've already talked main event. If you want to throw in some thoughts on main event, go ahead.
Let's see. In terms of the main event, can you guess what I'm going to say about it?
I can guess. Yeah, I don't know. I would think that, I'm not sure. Because it's got hallmarks of things that you were just like, I feel like this is done and played out. But also had a lot going on story-wise to move us in a few different directions. So I guess I don't know.
The ending was dumb, but whatever, because yes, it is moving on to the next step. What was crucial here in getting me to like this match, on top of the fact that after the good, I would say very good, very entertaining opener, there wasn't really too much to sink your teeth into throughout the meat of this show. So you're looking to the bookends, and this delivered. What was crucial was the facial selling from both Hayes and Dunn. Dunn, who has been played out for a while in his veteran guard role. But, you know, it really felt like he was trying to be the guard here, be the old guard. And Hayes was really trying to make sure that he didn't fail his own boastfulness. And that came off in the performance. So they did the usual NXT main event work ready match that I always kind of roll my eyes at, but they used it to tell a story. And in addition to that, I believe this is the second time Dexter Lumis has been on commentary. It was funny the first time. It will be funny the third time. It was funny tonight. I think it's a good thing that they are focusing on Bron Breakker and not just throwing a whole bunch of people in the mix. In that particular mix all at once. Obviously, they're throwing a whole bunch of people into the mix. But Bron, I think it's a good thing that they have highlighted him as the cream of the crop. And you've already got Tony D'Angelo with top guys' names in his mouth, and this week with Pete Dunne having to respond to that. So it's not that they're ignoring everyone else on that top level, but I think that the signaling with Bron has just been superb. We've all got our eyes on him as a result. And as far as what happens next with the feud, the fact that Ciampa and Breakker were featured on the UK tour leads me to wonder if they are both getting a look for the main roster, if Ciampa's thinking has maybe had to change in regard to how he wants to approach that sort of thing, and if they will have him, and if Breakker is on the fast track and will just skip the, you know, almost obligatory NXT championship run for him altogether. So that's where my mind is at, wondering if both of them are on their way up, or at least being considered. That's where I'll put it. Not on their way up, but being considered, getting that look, the same way that, you know, for years we would see call-ups happen after the NXT talent had spent some time on the road doing house shows with the main roster.
Yes. And it's hard to answer Darrell's question exactly, but because it's so big picture, but I will say what Tom was kind of saying is that you can't push a lot of people at a high level at the same time and expect anyone to stand out. So they had to, give a shot to Bron Breakker. And, you know, looking back 8 years ago, this is how – 8 and 9 now. This is how it was done. And even if you won the championship, that was just so, so secondary at the time to getting a job on the main roster. And that was how it was framed by the announcers, and it'll be interesting to see if they de-emphasize those championships and say it really is about getting to the main roster, because that's how the announcers even framed it at that time. Darrell, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, they both can be main roster going, but I don't know if anybody want to go to the main roster, because if they both go, they probably be cut within a year, so I don't know if they really want to do that, because the person at top don't have an idea of what he want. He just have a new toy feeling, like throwing toys away. But that's another story for another day. Okay, another thing that I'm finding very interesting is what they're doing with Cameron Grimes and Duke Hudson. I'm liking it. I'm kind of feeling it. I know it was a drastic change on how they twisted Duke Hudson and around and made him into this hustler guy who the poker and all of that. But I'm liking what I see, hopefully. And it looks like they building two guys up, but kind of really focusing on Cameron Grimes to a point, even though they're giving Duke Hudson a bigger rub with it and seeing how he go. I wish he could have handled those what chants a little bit better and without that robotic pace that caused that what chants. But I'm interested to see how this go, and I'm interested to see where that match go. What do you guys think about all of that?
Nothing ruins a heel promo like a what chant. Okay, so Cameron Grimes goes over Ru Fang in 144. I said this before. I will keep saying it. I really like Ru Fang. I really like his ranginess, his kicks. He's crisp. He's precise. He's mean. And if he gets himself a push, I'm going to just eat it up because he's just so my type of talent. And I hope that I can see more out of him. Cameron Grimes, also my kind of talent, rangy, mean, also happens to be hilarious. So there's that too. Yes, he goes over. Duke Hudson is in the corner at the time. And then they do a segment in the ring that's much lengthier than the match itself. And it ends with them agreeing to a poker showdown next week on the show. So that's one of your two quote unquote matches for next week is this poker showdown between Duke Hudson and Cameron Grimes. I don't know what else there is for Cameron Grimes to learn on NXT. He keeps getting into the best feuds on this show, literally the best feud at any given time, or the best story told is always Cameron Grimes is always either it or he's in within spitting distance of it. And when you're that good a worker, some of it's going to be you. A lot of it's you. And a lot of it is because you've built up so much goodwill that the writers just want to write for you because it's fun. And that's what Grimes has created here. A worker that these writers that creative wants to do something with all the time. And so he's never outside an interesting story. So I'm just very happy about that. But I really like what they're doing with him and Duke Hudson. The thing with the poker showdown maybe should tick me off, maybe, but given the talent involved, and the fact that I love poker, I'm for it, Tom.
We've got ourselves just as soon as we got rid of Qian Sha, and they finally, because they finally said the Americanized version of their stable name out loud, only the one time I think they got before getting shuffled off to the side. Just as soon as they were cast aside, we get Ru Fang, but they keep saying Ru Fang, and I'm going to need him to say it the Americanized way before I feel like I can mispronounce it, because just hearing Vic Joseph say Ru Fang is like, oh,
and
it's not
I,
a
and
podcast,
I don't,
but I'm hanging my head.
And I can't, like, that part of the world, I can't, like, if it was Japanese, I would know it exactly, and I would be so annoyed. And you say that now, and I'm like, of course that's correct, but I'm leaning Vic for this.
And I certainly, and everybody's got their own little pockets of knowledge in that regard, so I'm certainly not trying to dig on you. It's just the same old thing where, like, in certain regards, when it's just an accent, I get it. But when it's the actual way that you pronounce the language, I do not understand why they Americanize it and why they have to play to the lowest common denominator rather than – there's a lot of wrestling where I will justify playing to the lowest common denominator. But, you know, this is just like – educate. If you say it right one time, then we'll know that that's what it is. I mean, they do Arturo Huas, but, you know, I guess that was – yeah, there was like an MMA fighter named that. But I digress. You know what? I'll digress a little bit further. Duke Hudson jogged past my car yesterday. I drive through his neighborhood almost every single day, and I just happened to catch him out for a jog with another fellow wrestler, and he was in gimmick because he was shirtless. So you know, little thumbs up to old Duke there. I think that he and Grimes did. Oh, I skipped a part. I promised my daughter that I would say that. After NXT tonight, she came out before bed and said, was Austin Powers on the show tonight? And I had no clue what she was talking about. But she was in the back seat when this non-encounter, this sighting, this wild sighting through the window happened. And even though I told her who he was, for some reason she got it in her head that his name was Austin Powers. So there's that.
Yeah, baby.
Anyway. Duke and Grimes, they did Duke and Cammy, they did make the best out of what they had here. And yeah, it's I'm in favor of this. Obviously, it will lead to a match. I was worried they were just going to book the match for next week, so I was happy when I heard Poker. That should be a fun next step in this feud. Cameron Grimes is like the RK-Bro of NXT. He's constantly getting crossover segments. RK-Bro didn't get one this past Monday, but it's been true more often than not. And the work is there, and they are fun, and the company sees it, so they keep on putting them in these positions. So not the greatest segment in the world, but a nice stepping stone towards something that should be more entertaining next week.
Nate? I'm pretty much going to parrot a lot of what Tom just said. You know, I wouldn't say this was the greatest Cameron Grimes segment in the world, but it was still enjoyable. I still had still enjoyed watching it. Cameron Grimes and Duke Hudson, this whole Poker thing. I liked the segments last week. Jack that joined me last week, he also really enjoyed these Poker segments. It reminded him a lot of he was really, from like the 80s, late 70s, early 80s. It reminded him a lot of like those type of segments. Really, really on board with those. And I'm curious to see what this whole Poker Showdown thing is going to be next week. Are they going to be playing poker in the middle of the ring? Are they going to try and maybe do something like Double or Nothing and get some giant poker chips or something? And I don't know. It's going to be weird. I'm not sure what a Poker Showdown is during a wrestling show, but we'll find out next week. Like you said, Kelly, I'm kind of giving it a pass because of the talent involved. Generally, I think something like this, I'd roll my eyes at and be like, a Poker Showdown? Come on, what the hell? But it's Cameron Grimes, and anything he's done so far since debuting has been just gold. And Duke Hudson, since he's been in this new iteration of this character, even before the whole poker gimmick, really, and he kind of just started playing this bad guy type character, I've really enjoyed his heel gimmick. It kind of, again, reminds me a little bit of an old school type of heel, but he's got like a new edge to him as well. I like it. I like what's going on. It's not my favorite of the Cameron Grimes craziness, but it's... it's certainly intriguing. I think the work that he and LA Knight did was phenomenal. That I think is like some of my favorite stuff that he's done so far. But this has some potential, and looking forward to see where this goes.
Darrell, go ahead with another.
Okay. Now, my next thing, and Tom might not like me, but my next thing, I want to go to the opening match. I understand that they like toxic attraction, but they're doing the overkill with having the announcers trying to talk them into seeming more credible than what they really are. The piped-in chants and boos throughout the match, when you seeing people not moving and on their hands, didn't really get me. I understand they go for a look, but if a look is part of the three things you need in wrestling, two of the things they don't have, mic skills and talking, and two of the people in the next 5 years have been wrestling for 10 years. And my whole thing is I've fallen out of WWE and any wrestling company with those type of pushes. I don't like these type of characters, especially if you get rid of other people and one person exact that you just called up, you get rid of her when, and in wrestling terms, she is just as worse as those as some of those women, but she could talk better and she got a look herself. So she got two of the three. They only have one, but that's another thing. Or you going into a gimmick that has no ceiling and has no purpose, like has no purpose to the titles or anything of the sort. And it's hard to build up rivalries or feuds because people just going off looks and stuff like that. When this I lead down into the Eva Marie type of category, which she's just been cut for the second time. So that's a future that I see. But the match was, I guess, okay. Kind of poorly wrestled. Was ready to see what they're going to do with it. They let them win. Where do you guys see this going, or and where could this go? Because I'm not liking it. I don't think it adds anything to either of the titles. It don't make you want to see anybody beat them or anything, and they're not building anybody up to that. What do you guys think?
So I'm more or less with you, like, and especially when you hit the line, it doesn't make me want to see people beat them. Like, it actually makes me kind of tune out to the championships because they're not doing a lot for me in these particular hands. I like Dolan. I tolerate Jane, yes. And Mandy Rose has been there a long time to only be as good as she is. She's the best one on the mic of these three, which is not meant to be a comment on her, really. There's just so much work to be done here. So it's weird to, like, I knew they were going to give this group all the gold, but it does seem like it's so jarring when this was very recently the women's division to be in. Stardom. And Impact, of course. But it's just, yeah, it's kind of made me occasionally forget who the champions are, which I do when they're not, when either they're not doing much or it just doesn't genuinely interest me. I'm in favor of the heels winning in this match. Dolan pins Carter at 12:49. Actually a pretty sweet finisher. I liked what she did. It was kind of an abdominal stretch into a bomb. I don't really know how to say what I saw, but it's something like that. And I thought the ring work in the match was proficient, competent, if slow at times. But it was fine. 12:49, it was our longest match on a show that had just as much wrestling as the previous version of NXT, right around 52 minutes, which is right where that show ended all the time. Nate on the opener.
Okay, so I'm kind of with you guys as well, although I can't even believe I'm saying this, I might actually be a little bit higher on it than you guys are. I don't completely dislike Toxic Attraction. They they're not my favorite thing on NXT by a long shot. And Kelly, as you just said, where this was like the division, this was like the brand for women's wrestling. This group, as well as really a lot of the women on the roster right now, kind of leave a little bit to be desired in terms of like actual wrestling ability. They're passable, but it's not, you know, some of the absolute just like classics we've gotten over the past few years. Okay, with Toxic Attraction, their gimmick, like I kind of understand where Durrell's coming from, like not wanting to see like the TNA and things like that on the show. And it's weird because I'm kind of torn with it. Like there's a part of me that's like, all right, yeah, there's, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of the Attitude Era and all that stuff and, you know, whatever. But at the same time, I think if it's done well, it actually can work. And this isn't like the Attitude Era where they're just presenting scantily clad women to be just eye candy. Like they're actually presenting them as like competitors and champions and confident characters. And I'm kind of okay with that. I definitely see both sides of the coin in terms of like, you know, the look and the gimmick. But I think if they keep going in this direction and they don't do that with every single woman in NXT, we kind of saw some of that with like Electra Lopez and stuff, but I feel like that kind of fits her character too. That might have been, you know, whatever. But regardless, as long as it kind of stays in a little bit of a bubble here with Toxic Attraction and whatnot, I'm okay with it. I think it's kind of tasteful and it'll be all right. I feel like they're also, because like you guys just said, right now the title scenes all around kind of feel a little blah, like really where, you know, we're not sure where everything's going to be falling and things like that. I think right now Toxic Attraction is still just getting established as the top, quote, attractions on, on the brand for the women's division. And I again, can't believe I'm saying that, but that's the position they're putting them in. I don't think they're ready for the spot, to be honest. Mandy Rose is, as you said, she's as good as she is. She's, you know, for as long as she's been with the company, what, like six, I think it's what, 2015, Tough Enough it was. So she's been around for like 6 years or so. I feel like she should probably be a little bit better than where she's at. She's certainly passable, but not the best, you know, that they've got to offer, the best homegrown talent they've got, period. Gigi Dolin is certainly my favorite of the group. I think she's got a lot to offer, but I think she needs to work on like her in-ring work is fine. It's the outer ring stuff that I feel like she needs to work on a little bit. Mike Rick's okay, whatever. JC Jane, I kind of feel the same way with you. I just tolerate her. She's there. She kind of feels like Bobby Fish. She's just there, you know. I don't like her. I don't hate her. She's just Bobby Fish. But yeah, you know, I'm with how protected the women's division has been for so long, it is kind of almost sad in a way to see it where it is right now, because I haven't forgotten who the champions are since Toxic Attraction won, because it's stable, it's holding them and all that right now. But I mean, for a while, like I could not, like if you asked me a couple few weeks ago who the NXT women's tag team champions were, I would not have been able to tell you it was Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. I would have had to really think about it. They're not really divisions that have been catching fire, and it's I'd like to see it kind of pick back up.
Tom.
Let's see how quickly I can zoom through the preamble part of this. It seems unrelated, but Durrell did bring up the cuts. And setting aside, of course, this is like heel turn territory, but it is how I see it. Setting aside attitude issues, and I'm not just talking about the one that's been tagged with attitude issues, but, you know, attitude issues as they apply. People refusing the vaccine as they apply. They just did that one to themselves. I mean, come on. I do feel that apart from Scarlett, the one cut of the list that I disagree with, because Scarlett had a lot of potential in a lot of different departments, the, you know, and again, I don't know what other things that previously, you know, already stated that she may, that may have applied to her, but I feel all the other cuts fit in one of two categories. One is, for better or for worse, their runs are behind them, whether it be Ember Moon or someone who was hinting that they probably wanted to move on to another chapter anyway, like Oni Lorcan, you know, their runs are behind them. Or somebody like Trey Baxter or B-Fab, who are getting opportunities, whether they are newer or whether they've been signed for a little while, like a Karrion Kross, they keep getting opportunities, but they keep on not proving themselves in those opportunities. And so the entire list was made up of people like that to me. I say all of that because it relates to Mandy Rose in the sense that she absolutely would have fit in either of those categories at varying points in her career, and I would not have argued with her cut either. And that's just because Durrell was drawing the, you saying, like, well, they're cutting this person and this person, but Mandy Rose is still around. And yeah, I don't know. Well, we know why Mandy Rose is still around and whether we agree with that reason or not. And however superficial that reason may be, they find her to be marketable. And I'm just looking at the fact that from where I'm sitting, I say again that I feel she is absolutely living up to the role that she's been given. It doesn't feel like that much of a predictive thing anymore to say that NXT is trying to position them as the faces of the brand. I mean, how many times have they opened the show now? And I feel like they have succeeded in becoming the reason to watch NXT right now. Not only is the signaling there that they are a big deal, but I feel they're living up to the spot. Should JC Jane keep her feet away from the ropes? Yeah, probably. Should Gigi Dolan probably peel back a bit on the whole, I'm the like off balance one who sticks out my tongue a lot? Yeah, probably. But other than that, no notes. I'm enjoying the trajectory. I think the performance really lives up. So I wish that I could try to enlighten you more as I forget what the exact word was that you used, Darrell, but I wish I could tell you more as to why I enjoyed this, but I just the way you described it versus the way I'm describing it, it almost seems like we're just looking at different things, and I don't think either of us are incorrect for that. It's just that it almost seems like we're talking about two different matches. I just very much, you know, apart from JC catching her feet on the ropes again, I very much enjoyed this match. I always, you know, for their part, I always enjoy Casey and Lacey. That still applies. And then you've got, like I mentioned with the Persia Parada match, you've still got Io working with Tom Caster, seeming like the two of them are tag teaming, being the player coaches, the on TV, we're doing it live coaches. And Io was the glue of everything. And it's very much working for me, and it's fun to watch. As far as, you know, who the champions are and whether or not they're building up challengers, I mean, we've got Raquel in her own feud away from the championship, but still mentioning to Mandy, hey, keep that title warm for me. So whether or not it happens, at least putting the energy out there that a rematch is possible. While also, of course, you've got the Kaylee Ray thing, which is very interesting to me. I mean, it's hard to imagine that Kaylee ends up winning that match. I know, as much as it pains us to envision that, because it's Kaylee, but you know, I think that would be an interesting matchup. And as for the tag belts, I'm not worried about it because, you know, still just repeating myself as I always do here, but the tag belts are just like a different look for what was already the perennial to the top title segment of the women's division. The tag belts don't really mean anything, and they've just been like swapped around all over the place. It's just, you know, it could have been a personal feud in a bygone era. Before these belts, and now that the belts are here, it's the belts. And so the fact that there aren't really any other tag teams other than Casey and Lacey, I'm not worried about it. They'll come up with someone. It's not a big deal.
On Raquel saying keep that belt warm for me, I basically wrote in my recap that I thought it was the most woodenly spoken line that I've heard on NXT.
It was bad.
But
it was terrible. The motorcycle roaring over it too, yeah.
She was, I'm convinced that she was so concerned with controlling the motorcycle, hitting her spot, hitting her mark, getting in the right spot so she didn't cover the other girls or go past them. And then all of that business that by the time she got to her line, it was secondary.
Yep.
Oh, my God. It was
so – I will admit that coming in on the motorcycle at a point – coming into the performance center in front of the crowd on the motorcycle – at a point where she was not expected to appear, I felt was a cool first appearance after losing the title spot for her. And so that probably overcomes that for me. But yes, it absolutely stood out how wooden that delivery was. So I agree there.
And the energy when she actually got into the ring was quite a bit better. So you could tell they were done at different times because when she was out there...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was an agreeable crowd tonight. It was an agreeable crowd tonight. I think, you know, again, Darrell mentioned the crowd as well, and maybe I was just looking at different people, but I didn't feel like some of the chants were piped in, at least the ones I was detecting. And actually, a lot of people were chanting for Mandy.
Yeah, it was – they were no good. Nate, go ahead. Or did I throw it to you already?
You already did.
Okay. I'm just trying to – get away from Mandy Chance. Darrell, if you got one more, go ahead, because I got just the one caller tonight.
Okay. And, yes, I do have one more. Just to respond to that, the let go that I was comparing to was the B-Fab one and, the Scarlett Bordeaux. And, you know, you just getting her to re-sign. And yes, she horrible in the ring, which can be admitted. But she better on the mic than any of those three, and got a look as well. And since those three have been leading in NXT 2.0, which not being seen like a winner, has been going down week by week anyway. So out of the four, out of the 5 weeks, outside of in one of those weeks for Halloween Havoc. So I don't. I just don't like them as a whole. I don't like them as a whole. I don't find that interesting. It makes me want to turn off the NXT and not even call in or do anything. But outside of that, two things that caught my attention. I'm continuing to like what they're doing with the Diamond Mine. I like how they had them training and then watching the footage and then Malcolm Bivens, who he needs to get even more talking time with them, but I like the talking time that they give him and what he said and how they build this up and everything. I'm liking that they continue on the feud, and I'm interested to see. I'm guessing that we're going to have a Diamond Mine feud in that War Games cage, which I would love to see, and you'll have a girl, maybe even including having a woman, inside of the War Games cage with another people. So I want to see how they build that up. And it's looking like they building that up for something like that. That could be something that they build into War Games. How did you guys like that whole segment and everything like that? And do you think that's something that they can build into a War Games faction since they came out with a pay-per-view?
Yeah. So I, too, love Malcolm Bivens, and I'll co-sign all of that. I feel like if you took Paulie Dangerously, now Paul Heyman, and Slick, and put them together, maybe that's who you'd end up with. Because I'd try to compare him to some of the greats, because I think he could be one of the greats. But I love that I can't easily put a label on him. He wouldn't be the second anyone. He would be the first Malcolm Bivens. And I absolutely want to see him on a higher plane, regardless of who he's working with. Just love, love, love every second that he gets on the mic. So, yes, we got Jacket Time versus the Creed Brothers. Jacket Time, that being a guy with a jacket and a guy who travels time. So don't overthink it, folks. Ike Manjiro and Kushida versus the Creed Brothers. The Creed Brothers go over in 7:48 when Julius pins Ike Manjiro after some distraction from Roddy. It appears that Roddy will be the guy who maybe gets into yet another War Games, because I don't know who else you do War Games with at this point. There are no, it seemed like a few months ago, we were talking about which of these many, many factions are going to be in war games. And now we're like, how do we find anyone to be in war games? Especially now that we know it's 4 weeks away, not even 4 weeks away. We got three more NXTs before this happens. So we gotta make hay, folks. I would suggest we will find out next week, because they will not try to keep building that show without letting us know. And yes, I will say, yes, this is the segment. This is the one where this will happen. Is this also where we got Odyssey? This is where we got Odyssey, right?
Yes.
Okay. So this is where we got Odyssey Jones. Let me go to two emails. This one is from Blake Riley. Hey, guys, I really try to relax when I watch NXT. Some of the changes I don't see too much of an issue with. And even though I have no idea what Joe Gacy is saying most of the time, I'm willing to see it through. But jacket time? What have they done to Kushida? He went from being the cruiserweight champion to being in a ridiculous comedy team. I couldn't even enjoy the Creed brothers because I was so annoyed by that name. Thanks for letting me vent. Blake from the Blake and Sal Show, celebrating show 400 this week. P.S. I did appreciate Vic giving Wade crap for the core. I always hated the spelling of that team. So did I. So does Wade. Yeah, I don't take issue with the name Jacket Time. I don't take issue with two low-card guys having their gimmicks mashed together and then having their team name just being a portmanteau of the things that they both do. I do have issue with Kushida being one of them, because he has a ceiling that is much, much higher than the low tag team on the totem pole, but they are not willing to use him in that way. That's the issue for me. I don't care that a comedy team is called Jacket Time in theory. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. And I thought that it was okay, although this match was 7:48 and 4 minutes were on commercial. So it's not like we saw a whole lot of our crossover match here, Tom.
Yeah, that is the exact issue, is how much time they're going to spend on it. Because when you get Jacket Time, sometimes you only get 2 minutes. But, you know, sometimes it's going to take like 15 or 20 to really get some good Jacket Time. You know, I've been known to enjoy. So
I'm shaking my head like, loudly that it came out as a laugh.
I'm just like, where do I stop this? Where do I stop this? Sometimes right,
you take your pants off first.
Actually, he got called up already. I actually like this. I will admit that at first I had Blake's same reaction. And then I immediately pulled back and I thought, you know what? If Kushida had been on that list of cuts, I wouldn't have been surprised. So this is okay. It seems like he's probably winding down his WWE stint anyway. What else are they really going to do with him realistically? So this works for me. And I, you know, yes, the wordplay, well, the intended wordplay, but then also the, you know, the way that it sounds when you actually say it out loud is there. But I, you know, it's the first time that I saw Ikem and Jiro on a show and I was like, okay, I think I'm starting to get the humor a little bit. Maybe he just needed the Han Solo rub from Kushida, but, you know, a little rub in your Jacket Time usually helps out. So I think that, you know, the duo is just silly enough to work. And then my only other note is, well, I guess there's a six-man incoming. So I guess that, you know, bleeds into the War Games conversation. If we didn't get that Daniel Vidot segment tonight, then Zion Quinn segment tonight, then I think I would say that Santos Escobar should challenge Ciampa for the championship, and then Ciampa should team up with Breaker and, I don't know, somebody else, and go up against Legado del Fantasma. But, like, I just – what's holding me up here is, do you really want Roddy and Kushida in there being, you know, running the match with you know, Smith and Caster, whoever they throw in there, with the Creeds and Jiro and Jones. It just, it has not been in the history of War Games. I know we're in a different version of NXT now, but it has not been a thing that they've done with War Games to put in people that they don't trust to handle all the craziness that, that usually comes out of it. So I'm looking at that.
I'd be down with that, but they put people in a ladder match that shouldn't be in a ladder match.
Okay, fair.
I just don't know.
Well, I guess on the subject, and with Blake's name coming up, I will mention that he has already recruited me to be on the December 1st NXT War Games preview show. Notably, not TakeOver. So we were all right, everyone. Were there going to be any more TakeOvers or not? Both yes and no.
Yeah, now this one falls in that really weird area with what was the first one? Arrival.
NXT Arrival.
Arrival.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they'll go back to it and they'll number it again. And we'll be like, wait, so Arrival doesn't count? But NXT War Games does? Come on, guys.
Oh, boy. These are the things you care about, particularly if you like Star Trek or comic books. But now apparently also wrestling.
Check.
There you go.
All right. So I kind of enjoyed the whole Jacket Time thing. Like, so here's the deal. I want to see Kushida in a more meaningful role, period. Like, I feel like he's got so much more to offer than what he's been able to do in NXT, you know, whether it be injuries or, you know, start and stop pushes, whatever. I feel like he's got more to offer. But you know what? It's TV time. He's getting TV time. And Ike Manjiro is kind of a guilty pleasure. He's freaking hilarious. So to see them kind of together and just being weird and wacky and zany is just, it's fun. It's cool. I'd rather see Kushida doing something else, but if this is what they're going to give me, I'm all right with it. It was interesting. It was definitely interesting. The Creed brothers for this match, I thought were fantastic. Anytime they get in the ring, I love watching them. And it's weird because even though they're fantastic grapplers, it's like they move a little strange in the ring. I don't know if it's just because they're like really tall and lanky or what. But like they kind of just move a little differently around the ring than just about anybody else that I've seen. And that really intrigues me. I like that. It gets me. And I think them going over is obviously the right move, building up Diamond Mine, which kind of gets into the War Games stuff. Like, I'm glad we're seeing War Games. Definitely glad we're seeing War Games. I think it's interesting that the War Games logo looks so much like a NXT black and gold logo. And it's like they just got away from like all the barbed wire and those dark colors. And now here we are back with all of that. I just thought that was interesting and kind of funny. I think Diamond Mine is probably tailor-made for War Games at this point. Like Kelly, you said, we were talking about all these different stables and things that could potentially hit Rowe and Legato in War Games would have been fantastic or something like that. But obviously now we're kind of down to like, who's it going to be? I'm not really sure how they're going to build to a couple War Games matches here. I'm sure they're probably going to do a men's or women's. Really interested to see how they wind up building this. Cause like, I can't really see if they're going to put Diamond Mine in a War Games match. Now that's a mid-card War Games match. Diamond Mine isn't being pushed as a main event, like level, you know, faction at all. So it's a mid-card War Games match. They haven't really done that. They've always usually been, you know, main event level spots. So like part of me is like, okay, yeah, it makes sense to put Diamond Mine in there. But then at the same time, I'm like, but does it? And if they do that, will they wind up maybe doing two men's War Games, not a women's War Games? Will they do three War Games match? I don't want to see three War Games matches in one night. Maybe I do. I don't know. But it doesn't sound good. I feel like it would just, you know, love diminishing returns.
There will not be three. I also think there will not be two. I mean,
oh, really?
Really?
Man, maybe.
They've done two for a couple years now.
I know.
I was about to say that I just realized we're going to get Persia Parada in a War Games match.
And that's
because
I'm talking myself out of there even being two.
Yeah. maybe there shouldn't be.
That shouldn't be. She shouldn't.
Ooh.
She shouldn't.
No, you get it. It's you know, the collection of baby faces led by Raquel against Toxic Attraction and Dakota.
Ah, there we go.
Oh, I suppose Dakota.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Oh, that makes
Raquel,
sense.
Raquel, Kaylee. Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be
You could put EO in there, but I don't know. I'm just fantasy booking it out loud at this point. But
yeah.
I was trying to force Persia in there, but she's not going to be in there without Indy. And if they want to do, yeah, you get Raquel, EO, Kaylee. And Cora Jade. Obviously, Cora Jade is the other one.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. But Dakota and those three is going to be the hardest time I've ever had to figure out who I'm cheering for in the match.
Hey, she already helped Manch win.
Oh, can Dakota Kai and Gigi Dolan win while Mandy Rose and JC Jane lose? Is that an option? Oh boy. Okay. We got this one out of the way. Drell, if you've got one more, go ahead. Otherwise, we will run for the exits here.
Okay. Don't really have one more per se, so that'll be it for me. I would just love to hear you guys speak on one thing, Dakota Kai and her seemingly triple threat feud that she's going in, and how they had her come out there with the manic look, which I like, which I think I would have loved to see them came back with sooner. But, yeah, that's it for me.
Thanks, as always, Darrell. I love Dakota Kai, but there wasn't a damn thing wrong with what she was doing before. I don't think this tweak was necessary, but if this tweak kept her on my television screen, then bless the tweak. She doesn't seem to be tailor-made for the role she's playing, but she is a hard worker. And she's going to find herself in this role if it takes her a couple of weeks, a few weeks, a month. I don't know. She will find it because she's very good. But right now, there are growing pains as she went from a role that is perfect for her and didn't need work to one that is more high concept and cartoonish. And is going to require a different calibration. She looks the part. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. They're doing what they with the shock pink, going just further and further in that direction. And I guess that I'm surprised that the her and Raquel thing keeps going like away from the championship. I guess I just thought that this would be swept under the rug. I thought Dakota at this point was either going to be gone or on the main roster. I'm very, very surprised to see her here. I'm very surprised that I'm still talking about her on this show because I did not think she would be on this show anymore. I thought that they were going to either end her time there or move her to the main roster. I'm surprised that another tweak was necessary. So that's why it's tough for me to even figure out what my thoughts are, because I thought she was done on the show. So no issue with it necessarily, but we didn't get to see a lot of it because she got cut off real quick. That is picture thing I wanted to bring up about this episode of NXT is that the art of the promo is very important, and nobody is getting to try to paint on their canvas to make art from their promo because every promo is being interrupted immediately. Mackenzie Mitchell had four, maybe it was five, interviews. And in all of them, somebody interfered. Somebody stormed in on the interview within 5 seconds on all of them. And it was very frustrating. Like, it made me laugh by the time they got to the second to last one. And then the last one, you just know what's going to happen. If it happens every time, then it's expected and it's not fun. Let people cut a promo every now and then. That is something that they need to learn. And that's what this is supposed to be, NXT. I didn't know I was going to get so riled about this, but why wouldn't I? Tom, go ahead.
It was extremely noticeable. It was extremely noticeable in those interviews. I will actually go ahead by bouncing a question back at you real quick, because this is 2 weeks of the podcast in a row, and honestly, three, because people were talking – we were getting emails after Halloween Havoc talking about Dakota's new gimmick. She's – what am I missing? I'd like, genuine question – how is she new? How is she different? How is this a new character for her? Because I'm just viewing her as Dakota coming back for revenge, and it's not a new character. It's still Dakota. So what is different now?
I think they're going for unhinged. I think they're going for crazy. There's that inner rage, like putting your hands through your hair, like just ripping out. I think that they're going for broken, crazy.
Yeah,
like
I agree with that.
That is what, okay, I think they're going for, but we're not seeing much of it because they're cutting her off.
Right. Gotcha. Understood. Okay. Yeah, I guess I already mentioned Raquel overcoming wooden delivery with a cool motorcycle entrance. Just she lost the title. She might not have appeared on the show again and gone to do main roster stuff or whatever. But she shows up in the motorcycle at an unexpected moment and, you know, cool. And like on paper, it doesn't even sound cool, but I think she pulled it off. It was done okay. And yeah, just the big question, I mentioned this a few times, was, I mean, I guess it's been about a month now that I've been saying like, okay, so if this is Dakota coming back and she's feuding with Raquel, that's great and all, and there's still meat left on that bone because they only did a one-match feud to that takeover. That was a takeover, right? Was it the final takeover? Anyway, yeah, I'll have to look it up after I'm done blabbing. But where was I? Oh, right. But because this is NXT 2.0 now, the whole thing is involving newer wrestlers in all of, like, every single storyline, every single segment has to involve one of the newer wrestlers. So Cora Jade was around before 2.0, but when she showed up, it was just like, ah, there it is. I don't expect them to gracefully handle it. I think, you know, with Sokoa and Waller and Knight, it's not particularly graceful. It's just sort of awkwardly jammed in there. But yeah, I, you know, it makes more sense in the context of 2.0 though, if that tracks. What do you got, Nate?
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm jumping in. So to be honest, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add to what you guys are talking about here. Like, Dakota Kai, she feels like to me, she does feel like a little bit of a new character. Like I hear what you're saying, Tom, like she kind of feels like more along the lines of where she was, like, but I do see what Kelly's talking about, like going kind of that more unhinged character, like when she came out tonight, her hair kind of all messed up and things like that. Yeah, I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting to get thrown to, so I'm not really sure what to say.
That's all right. I noticed those things too. I just wasn't thinking of it as like a new character or a new gimmick or just a new version of her old character. I just figured it was her playing into the storyline, like when Adrian Neville lost the Cruiserweight Championship to Enzo, and he showed up on Raw looking like he hadn't slept in a week, and he was just emotionally destroyed. He wasn't a different character. he was just affected by the storyline. So that's how I've been viewing the Dakota thing. And I guess if you know what, it just because it's the next thing down in my notes, if Kelly is not back yet, and if he is, he can cut me off. You know, darn system updates and all. I will ask you, Nate, what you thought of the Grizzled Young Veterans video. I guess this is, you know, boy, it's really just the next thing down in my notes. This is probably the kind of thing we can just throw in at the end. I'm not the one with the show notes.
Good point.
But, you know.
No, I actually enjoyed it. It's a little bit of a different, it's a little different than what we're normally used to out of them. A little bit more comedic and things, but well, I guess actually in a way, no, because they kind of showed up during like the Cameron Grimes stuff and during the golf course and things like that. That was all kind of comedic.
Yeah,
so you're kind of thinking about that. It's not, I guess not super out of the, like their wheelhouse in a way. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. I'll be honest. I don't remember a whole heck of a lot from it. Like it doesn't like stick in my brain, but I do know, like, I mean, remember, you know, like I said, I kind of enjoyed it. What about you? What did you think of that segment?
I think the issue with it is that it felt like it started halfway through, or it felt like maybe every other shot or every other line of the dialogue was removed in editing for some reason. Like, I didn't understand what had happened until the end. They just flew through it so quick, and there was no precedent for them unless, I mean, is there something that I missed from last week's TV where they set up that they were going to do something like this? Because I get that, you know, Gibson is trying to train Drake how to do better referee distractions by like running, you know, by like pickpocketing on the street.
Yeah.
But, or what is it? They're like robbing an Uber delivery person. I don't even know, because they just, it was such a slapdash little piece. But also, does Jake Drake really need help with that? I don't think they were really lacking in that department. I think these guys were pretty good at that already.
They've been the team that does it the most.
Yeah. So it really just reeks of someone decided that GYV needs a thing, which, okay, fine, I guess they kind of do, because, you know, I'm the guy who always says that just being good at wrestling is not much of a character. Works for some people, but those are an elite few. So okay, but this was a rotten introduction.
Yeah, I think there's always been more than that, just because of the Zach Gibson mic work on the way. But they just seem to like shy away from that, especially in the breakneck Wednesday Night Wars version of NXT, where they were like, there's no time for GYV to do literally the thing that keeps them the most over. Just get to the match. That did them no favors. If you're skipping out on Gibson's mic time and Blake has become like decent, then what the heck? What the heck's the point? Okay. So, there was other stuff on this show. There were other emails as well. This is from JB. I was supposed to read this a little earlier. It's JB from Detroit. For the first time tonight, I saw a lot of potential in Odyssey Jones. We've previously seen flashes, but tonight I think he got his best reaction to date. Granted, I acknowledge the PC crowd of regulars can be weird. I still think he has a long way to go in terms of promos and in-ring performance, but he definitely has charisma and an it factor that connects him to the crowd. What do you think is Jones' ceiling and basement, and who is the best comparison to him you can think of? My comparison is Keith Lee with a better attitude, allegedly. Second, if Cameron Grimes has had say in creative over the past year, plus he might be the best kind in the business. Okay, I'm going to try to figure out what that... I can kind of make out what he's saying. From connecting his redneck character to a zombie haunted house match at Halloween Havoc 2020 to parlaying his Beverly Hillbilly Bitcoin character into a feud involving the Million Dollar Man and LA Knight to currently combing the redneck character, combining the redneck character and Million Dollar character and involving it in Duke Hudson's poker room, he has been on quite the roll and has always had something for himself to move on to. What do you guys make of the evolution of Grimes? Love the show and go VIP! Love the evolution of Grimes, and he continues to Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. He segued everything naturally into a new feud. That is what wrestling is supposed to be. And at the height of, at really high times in wrestling, it seems like everyone's taking a little something from their last feud and gaining something and bringing it to their next feud. The Attitude Era, for all its faults, everybody always had something to do and a clearly defined goal. And that was also true. Hogan is the great kind of crummy factor hanging over the boom of the 80s because, like, so much had to revolve around him. But taking that out of the equation, it was also a very good time because, again, it seemed like no matter where you were on the card, you had some sort of feud. They gave them to everyone. Ceiling and basement of Jones. That's interesting. I mean, this guy has a wild ceiling and basement. I don't know how high he can go. I want to say the highest he gets is like maybe like a Kane or Mark Henry or somebody like that who can visit the main event, maybe even win that championship for a small amount of time. But that's it. I don't see him as a prolonged main event player. He would have to change something about that character in order to get there. But tonight, maybe tonight's version of him is the first in a series of thousands of steps towards getting him there. And his basement is, I don't know, Mantar. I think his basement is pretty low if things really break wrong for him. But I would bet against that because of the his basement is not Mantar because Mantar had no charisma. But he's it could go real wrong for him as well, I think. Anything on this email, Tom?
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody's basement right now, unless you're somebody who already has it built in, like, you know, first name that's coming to mind is Drew McIntyre. Actually, I think everybody's basement right now is the 24/7 division is what I was going to say. And what is what I am saying. And now I'm, since Drew was just the first name that came to mind, it's like, okay, well, he wouldn't even be involved in that segment. I think there was even a segment where the 24/7 champion at the time got laid out in front of Drew McIntyre, Elias, and Corbin, maybe, and they all just looked at him like none of them wanted to pin him. So some people don't have that basement, but, you know, like 95% of the company does. So that is his basement, and I can picture him there, but I am liking what I'm seeing, so I can picture him a lot higher as well. I don't want to go as far as to say top title, even in a, you know, the sort of situation that you're suggesting, Kelly. But, you know, I think maybe in like an RK Bro type situation where, you know, he tags up with a veteran and like that could be a pretty good height for what I'm seeing right now. But obviously there is a lot of potential to grow. What JB is noticing about his connection with the crowd, the charisma, what it's definitely a routine that he does. Well, I don't know if routine isn't the exact right word, but it's definitely a shtick that he does playing to the crowd. But it feels there is a large element of it that feels genuine. And I think that is the key to that connection he has with the crowd. And so for that reason and other reasons that I think we can just take as read, I don't like the constant Keith Lee comparisons that I see with him. Because I just don't. Yeah. As read, but that's the key reason. So when we're like, when JB asks, like, who is the best comparison point for him? I'm like, is it Doudrop? Like who, and you mentioned Hogan and I think you mentioned Warrior, or at least you mentioned Hogan and I started thinking Warrior. I'm like, who were these guys who just did like this over the top playing to the crowd during their entrance? Cause that is Jones's main thing that he does that gets him over with the crowd right now. So I can't think of anyone that has the exact thing that he's doing, but it's in that wheelhouse anyway. And the Cameron Grimes stuff, yeah, what I touched on earlier and what you just said, Kelly, I think covers my response to that as well.
I thought about 1995 Bam Bam Bigelow as a height, but Bam Bam was, by all accounts, kind of shunted aside by the clique who weren't about his burgeoning popularity. Nate?
So I've been talking about Odyssey Jones. So, like, I have been making a Keith Lee comparison to him, but I've been kind of calling him comparison between, or like a mash between Keith Lee and Mark Henry is kind of what I see him. It's like, I feel like he has a lot of the agility and speed that Keith Lee has, but also like the brute, as well as the charisma that Keith Lee has. And then like the brute strength and the same kind of body type as Mark Henry. And they, Bam Bam Bigelow was also somebody that did kind of come to mind for him as well. But I also feel like he might be not quite as polished yet to kind of get to kind of remind me too much of him. So Bam Bam, I think of a lot. Well, I guess I think of Bam Bam, like, I always think of Bam Bam as a high flyer, but he's really not. He just had the moonsault, really. But anyway,
and he did cartwheels, like,
yeah,
that was
cartwheels
early
and stuff.
On, that was one of his things.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see where his trajectory takes him, because I feel like he has all the charisma in the world. He's got a $1 million smile. He's got a great look. And I feel like, you know, I think it was in JB's email, he said, you know, he's got some, he's got a great attitude backstage. You know, I feel like he's got everything that they're looking for in a big man. What is kind of yet to be seen is his in-ring ability. He's not bad. He's good. You know, he's not like, you know, 97, 98 Mark Henry type, you know, whatever. He's good. But he's still green, and there's still a lot there that I feel like he needs to work on before he's like ready for the main roster, ready for like an actual, you know, championship push and things like that. But I feel like if he's able to pick all that up and he's able to get like actually, you know, get his feet under him and all that, I feel like he's got a really high ceiling. You know, and if not, I feel like maybe kind of, unfortunately, kind of down like around like Viscera, Big Vis type of a deal in terms of a big man, is like literally the first thing that came to mind. Maybe there's a better thing out there, but you know, it's also 11:45 at night. And my brain isn't working all that great anymore. Not like it ever does. In terms of the Cameron Grimes stuff, yeah, really, I can't really say it better than what you said earlier, Kelly. I mean, everything he does, he makes gold. You know, whether it's, you know, I have no idea if he has any involvement in his gimmicks at all. You know, I'm sure, I mean, I know that they're, you know, they're told to bounce ideas off of each other and bounce ideas off of creative and whatever. But even if he doesn't have any sort of say in anything that he's been thrown, he's you know, I guess you hear this a lot in wrestling. He's taking chicken shit and making chicken salad. And he's doing it damn well. You know, consistently, anytime he's on TV, Cameron Grimes is somebody that, like, I just want to see him. Matter of fact, I wrote in the Hits and Misses tonight, I called him arguably the most popular performer in NXT. Because if you listen to any of the reactions out there tonight, and granted, this is the, you know, quote, Full Sail NXT crowd. It's not a Full Sail, but, you know, I'm going to still call him that. It's that, you know, NXT crowd that's a little bit quirky and wonky or whatever. But I feel like Cameron Grimes got the biggest pop of the night tonight. You know, and again, maybe that's just Full sales, maybe not overall NXT audience, but everybody seems to be solidly behind him. We're solidly behind him. I haven't seen anybody, you know, in the countless articles that I've read about Cameron Grimes at NXT and you know, all this other thing, I haven't seen anybody talk negatively of him, whether it be his in-ring work, his charisma, backstage, anything like that. So yeah, I love Grimes, and I'm hoping he sticks around for quite a while.
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows Cameron Grimes, and
yes.
And I hear some very, very positive things about him as a dude. So hopefully that's all true. Can't say it firsthand, but have lots of reason to believe that it's probably true. Okay, so speaking of 11:45 at night, let us mash four lower card matches together and see if there's anything to say about them. Kaylee Ray defeats Saray in 4:52. Michael McGivern says, I love Kaylee Ray, so I'm not against a squash, but what do you do with Saray? She's ice cold, and I don't think she's been given any shine since debuting. I don't want to be over the top, but is she beyond repair at this point? I don't see how they can build her up. I'll get mine out of the way now. Not giving her any kind of gimmick in the beginning was kind of a problem. Not that she needs like a full-on big gimmick, but she was given nothing. They just said, here's a good wrestler. And that was supposed to be the reason to like her. And for, like Tom says, for select few that works, but Saray came out to the ring looking like she'd rather be anywhere else those first couple of times. And at that point, just being a wrestler doesn't work. So I don't know what you do. This match was better than competent. This was actually quite good in what little time it got. But it, what do you do? Joe Gacy goes over Boa at 3:22 by disqualification in a very, very Papa Shango match. There's suddenly this weird droning music and flashing lights. Boa goes into a trance. So apparently Chan Cha still exists, but only for Boa. And yes, he chokes out the rare five count choke out disqualification. You see one of these every 5 years. You got to just enjoy the moment when you see him, folks. So Joe Gacy goes over there and he's just waiting to meet up with Harland again. We got a triple threat, Grayson Waller, Solo Sikoa, and LA Knight. This is better on paper than it was in practice. I'm a fan of not just throwing together triple threats because I want them to be special and for them, for there to be a reason for a three-way issue if you've got one. But you kind of get away with this because putting Solo over two people at once is valuable, but only if he dominates the match, and he didn't. He'd get beat up by a double team, and then he would pick the bones on the other two being distracted by each other. I get that you want to protect LA Knight, or you should want to, because damn, and maybe protect Grayson Waller too, because I think there's a relatively decent ceiling there as well. But yeah, maybe Solo just dominates him if you want him to be the next big thing, and it seems like maybe they do. Electra Lopez goes over Erica Yan in 1:21. My biggest note here is that the announcer said, this match is scheduled for one fall, and then there was this awkward pause, and they stopped. They didn't say anything more. The wrestlers are like, do we go? And then they finally start wrestling. It's clear this was supposed to just go straight to the match, and nobody told the ring announcer they weren't supposed to say anything. It was messy. And then we got the after segment with Zion Quinn. Electra Lopez is sweet on him and he on her, but it's all sexual tension. And if you didn't pick that up from the extremely obvious scene, they had Beth say, there was a lot of sexual tension there, just in case you missed it. But yes, you could miss it because of bad acting, but otherwise it was all right there in what happened. But Elektra goes over, and I'm just, I want her to be better. Four matches, Nate.
Okay, can you hear me? I think you can hear me right now, right?
I sure can.
Okay, my headset was giving me crap, and it wasn't actually unmuting. That was weird. Kaylee Ray versus Saray. I actually really enjoyed this match for what it was. I knew this was going to be, a squash match in KLR's favor, and obviously it was. Saray got a couple things in here, but, man, this is really, really to highlight Kaylee Ray and how
how brutal she was. I mean, I basically said this, this is her comeback to NXT. She's been in NXT a couple times before. But I think now she's going to be, here to stay. This was a brutal match in terms of like just hard hitting action. There was a couple forearms right to Saraya's face. Some great, I guess British strong style, if you will. I thought it was really good. Saraya, I kind of agree, not giving her a gimmick right off the bat, and kind of just making her like, hey, I'm here. I'm happy to be here and smiley and whatever. That didn't help her at all. Her in-ring ability, at least at first, from what I remember, wasn't all that great. She didn't really wow any of us, especially considering the pomp and circumstance that she got coming into WWE and NXT in general. So, there's that. I'm really really looking forward to seeing what Kaylee Ray does in NXT. Glad to see her here, kind of excited about that. LA Knight, Grayson Waller, and Solo Sikoa. This is another one I actually really enjoyed tonight. Solo Sikoa, I kind of think of him as almost like a cross between Roman Reigns and Taz. I said this last week too, and it's a weird comparison, but a weird combination, I think. But I kind of think it works. Like, I don't get necessarily the submission stuff out of Taz, but just kind of like the way he walks around the ring and his presence and things like that. Obviously the towel on his head during his entrance and things kind of brings me there too, but he kind of has that same presence that Taz did back in the day. But then he obviously also has that same kind of Samoan presence that, the Usos and Roman Reigns exude, in the bloodline. So I'm really, really high on him. I think he's got he moves around the ring great. He's got some great moves. He also, between his body type as well as kind of some of the way he moves around the ring, he also reminds me of his dad, especially from, the head shrinkers days before Rikishi really started packing on the pounds. But I think he's got a big upside here. I agree with you that I would have probably liked to see him get a little more offense in, but I forgave it because of who he was in the ring with. Obviously you do want to protect LA Knight and Grayson Waller. I'm not sure how I feel about him yet. He's it's funny because every time he comes on the screen, I think he's Austin Theory and it takes me a second to be like, oh, that's definitely not Austin Theory. Yeah, he's okay. He's good. He's good. There's some good in ring stuff on the mic. He's not for me, and I'm not saying he's not bad, but he hasn't clicked with me yet. Maybe give it a few more weeks or something like that. But I just haven't, the stuff he did at Halloween Havoc, with LA Knight, I didn't really, it was okay for what it was, but his performance in general, I just didn't really, I haven't really jived with Grayson Waller yet. But but overall, I thought this match was pretty good. I'm glad to see Solo Sikoa obviously win here. I think that's the right move to kind of give him a little bit of a rub from, well, at least one already established talent in LA Knight, and Grayson Waller, I guess, is kind of established over the past few weeks here or whatever, but is what it is. Boa and Joe Gacy. I thought this was kind of a cool repackage or sort of repackage for Boa. I liked the face paint, the new attire. But I didn't like all of the weirdness at the end with the flashing lights and things like that. Matter of fact, I've got a friend staying with me right now and he was kind of just watching over my shoulder and he's like, oh my God, that guy has the power to make the lights flash. And I was like, yeah, that's literally what I'm typing in my report too. That's weird. Brand new superpower to make the lights flash. That's, and as well as increase his health bar, back to full, like he's a video game or something. A little weird there. If this does mean that we're going to see something more out of Tian Sha, I'm totally for it. Karen Q still with the company. Xia Li, she obviously got moved up, but Boa's still here. They put so much time and investment into Tian Sha. I kind of want to see something happen with it. I'm not expecting it at this point, but I really hope that there's something here. There's something here with this new change with Boa, and you know, we go from there. But every time Boa comes out, I keep saying this. So the last time he came out, the last couple times he was wrestling, he lost, I think, both of his matches before this even. And he, like, you know, and I kept saying, like, now this loss, he's going to try and pick himself back up and, you know, kind of get back to being, you know, meaner and nastier. And it just kind of never comes to fruition. So I'm hoping we see something like that, because I was really, really getting invested in this whole Tian Sha thing, the whole storyline, all those cartoons and stuff that they had. It was just really cool, really great. And then I'll end it with Electra Lopez versus Erica Jahn. I will say, I am very happy that we got like a jobber-esque type performer here with a relatively normal name, Erica Jahn. It wasn't like Zion Quinn or Malik Blade or something like creator wrestler-esque. So that was kind of cool. This match was okay. Was what it was, kind of like you talking about messiness at the beginning and whatever. But, it, you know, hey, as we said at the beginning of the show, technical glitches happen, right? Or whatever, glitches happen when it's a live show. This match really was just kind of to set up what happened after the match with Zion Quinn and everything. I really didn't think he was going to join Legado del Fantasma anyway, but yeah, it was kind of like, you know, is he, what's he going to do? Just kind of curious to see what he's going to say. Not surprised at all when he said no, really. But I do kind of think this might be setting something up for him versus Escobar, which I think you guys either talked to or hinted about. It kind of makes sense. We haven't seen Escobar in a while. And I think I'll save that for our next email. We haven't really seen Escobar in a while, so it'd be kind of cool to see him come back. Because for everything we've seen out of Zion Quinn, Daniel Vadeau, he's really impressed me in the ring. So I would love to see him get in there and start tangling with Escobar. I think that on paper anyway, that intrigues me. Sounds like it would be a great match. And maybe potentially it could even lead into him becoming, part of Legado del Fantasma, growing respect for them, getting brainwashed, getting kidnapped. I guess getting kidnapped worked for Mendoza and Wild, right? So maybe he's going to get kidnapped. Who knows?
Gloss over the fact that you called Malik Blade Malik Blade, but otherwise, those were matches. Tom, go ahead.
Kaylee Ray versus Saray, I felt was Saray's worst match yet. Almost everything she did was transparent in response to McGivern, right? Yes, McGivern. I think Saray is the only one who can help Saray at this point. She's got to rededicate herself to something if she wants to succeed in the company. I'm still not thrilled with Joe Gacy's in-ring. I think this is what it is, but I think I'd rather hear him do a promo segment than work a match. I mean, I guess it's me, so there, you could say that about almost anybody. But in this case, the in-ring does not back up what he's doing. As we get further and further, the Bray Wyatt comparisons that I did not want to make at first become harder and harder not to make. And Bray always, delivered in the ring. I know that's going to get pushed back, but I've spoken at length about my admiration for him. The issue, one of the many issues with Bray's various characters, though, or I guess particularly with the cult leader character, was always just, why is he a wrestler then? Like, what? Why is this person wrestling? That doesn't make sense. And you've got Wade Barrett on commentary here saying that Gacy wants the TV time to spread his message. And if you win matches, you get more TV time. So, perfect. Smoothed that over real quick. I am not thrilled with them giving up on Tian Sha, and I think they've given up on Tian Sha. I mean, Boa walked up to an empty throne last week and then turned around with the face paint and he blew the steam. So it's like when the shield dissolved and all of a sudden Dean's thing is, I wear stretchy jeans now, and Seth's thing is talking nasally. And Roman still comes out with the jacket, still comes out with a version of the Shield music. You know, Boa has just inherited the Qian Sha thing. So he didn't need it. I can look at it optimistically and say, like, well, at least they care about him enough to want to try and want to give him something. But Boa didn't need it. He already had the kickboxing thing going for him. I really like just basic Boa. And yeah, of course, the lightning is stupid. Again, yeah.
It's kind of like going to a reunion and, like, you see 20 years later somebody wearing their Letterman's jacket. Like, that's kind of how it felt.
You know, they did this with the Fiend in various ways. Obviously it goes back further than that. But then just very recently, one of the more egregious examples is what they did with Finn Balor, against Roman Reigns, which is it's Finn Balor. You did not need to protect him against Roman. He's the guy that you should just have Roman go through, and Roman doesn't need the Usos to help him beat him and all the hocus pocus and whatever. And I look at what they do and I'm like, okay, I see what you're going for. You want the supernatural character to have effects. You want, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, they've got it going on with, as annoying as I think Rick Boogs is, they've got it going on with the Shinsuke, where he's got a musician with him, I guess to an extent with New Day, but the trombone thing is different. With like, literally a guitar solo playing while Shinsuke does a certain move. I think it was neat in theory that Finn Balor came back to life and his theme song started playing as he made his babyface comeback, just like it would have if this were a movie, a literal movie, not the We Make Movies Pal kind of movie. But it just doesn't work. It's so see-through. It's like it's not even trying levels of see-through to just flash the lights when he's doing whatever it was he was doing. I already forgot. So yay, Boa on TV. But not yay this. The triple threat, Sokoa shows promise, but he is dragged down by Waller and Knight. I like Waller well enough so far. Knight, I have almost nothing but good things to say about, even though I don't think protecting him is an issue at all. You could have had Sokoa just run through him here. But in everything that they've done for a month now with Waller and Knight feuding with one another, both of them just come off like total dweebs. And that happened in the interview beforehand, and that happened in the match. And it just sort of, it's like, I want to see Sokoa away from the dweebery. And Lopez versus Yan. I've been seeing Yan pop up on social media lately, and I've been waiting for her for a long time. So I'm glad to finally... It seems like we're on the verge of getting a chance to see what she brings. Of course, she wasn't going to show that here, just getting thrown around by Lopez. And, you know, starting off as enhancement is absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. But starting off as enhancement for Electra Lopez, certainly not the most prestigious factoid one can hope for. But looking forward to seeing more from Yan. Lopez, I guess she's not as bad when she's not in there with B-Fab. I don't know. That match was just legendarily horrible. And what she had done previously wasn't great either. But, you know, anyway, we'll see. Daniel Vito, Medicine Woman, did the wink multiple times as he was backing up the ramp. It was almost like he wasn't sure if the camera caught it. But apart from that, successfully came off as extremely suave. I still like seeing Zion Quinn on my screen.
All right, so those were matches. The other things that happened that were not matches. MSK, they were walking, and they got to where they were going and realized that they were 420 miles away from their destination. 420, do you get it? Stoner comedy doesn't have to be funny. It literally just has to reference weed, and stoners think it's amazing. Andre Chase University, he's still swearing at people, but he's swearing in ways that don't have to be bleeped, which for me is less funny, but I liked that one of the kids in his class was kissing his ass to see this other side of Chase. And will we see that kid become part of Chase University on a bigger scale? I don't know. And we had Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner. O'Reilly saying, do I want to be a singles wrestler or be in this team? We got something special, me and Von Wagner. And it just blows my mind that Kyle had to be going to bed a few months ago thinking I could be the next champion in NXT. And now he has to stay to say stuff like, do I want to be a singles wrestler or do I want a team with Von Wagner? We also have two more emails. This one's from Jenny Edelston. Do you think Santos Escobar is headed for the main roster? Yes. And this one's from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. And welcome back, Kelly and Tom. I thought tonight was a solid episode. I love the continuing development of Odyssey Jones, the hijinks and subsequent bro love of the way, and the reemergence of Kaylee Ray. While I know it will take more to change Nate's mind, I saw a lot of positive things going on in the episode tonight. I continue to be encouraged by the champions and the primary challengers to those champions, and I think the storytelling is starting to grow some legs. That said, which of the active championship storylines are you most excited about for the next week? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, P.S. Woo, War Games is back. Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Yeah, the storytelling's growing some legs at times. It's interesting. It's different. It's always interesting whether I love or hate it, but it's different. Championship storylines most excited for the next week. I mean, a week's such a short amount of time. So I would say, North American by a long shot. And second place would be a tie for not appearing on the radar. Tom.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a tough question just looking 1 week ahead. I guess I will be curious to see if Mandy and Kaylee cross paths again. Maybe being generous there as far as looking forward to, but once I'm in the process of sitting there and watching the show, that will be something I'll notice. Santos Escobar headed for the main roster. I mean, seems like a can't miss. Change his name, please. Right? I mean,
yes.
I don't feel like you would. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's been long enough that I forget all the potential that we saw in Angel Garza. Now he's just in an undercard tag team and has been like absolute nowheresville. But, and of course, you know, I know how that sounds, bringing up that name, but I'm trying to look at it the way Vince McMahon looks at it. Is he going to look at Santos Escobar and go like, I've already got Rey Mysterio over here. I've already got Angel Garza over here. I don't even know what to do with Humberto Carrillo, because that's how he lumps people together. But I mean, I mean, you can't miss this guy. And you know, here I am saying that, and there are any number of people. I mean, apparently people thought that about Trey Baxter, the way Twitter was going on about how upset they were about these cuts. Like, WWE isn't a wrestling company anymore. Oh, you're really that sad about that list of names. Okay. So, you know, grain of salt or whatever, but Escobar is fantastic. Nothing on MSK. It's not worth saying anything about that MSK segment. Didn't really have anything on Andre Chase either. I didn't notice the student. You pointed out that the student looked like they might get a recurring role. Was it?
I'm not sure. They were just sitting in the front, and they started with the one that annoyed him, and then another one was just like, well, I just think that Andre was put into a bad position, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. It looked from the back like this is a PC wrestler. So maybe this is just early, because you know how if you look back on episodes, you see
someone
in a tiny, tiny role that, yeah, I mean, you know how that is. But I felt like they could grow something with this kiss-ass student, and maybe we finally see his face. But until they show his face, I'll assume it probably was just a one-time thing, and they don't want to overexpose him before they start using him on TV.
White guy?
Yeah, white guy, blonde hair. And
yeah, I was going to guess blonde. Is it long blonde hair?
Long blonde hair and a beanie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I know exactly who that is. He was in the poker segment last week, too.
Okay.
Don't look at his social media unless you want to be horrified by his views. But, you know, maybe that's an overstatement when you've got people like Jackson Ryker out there. But it is just like, okay, maybe you should just stay off social media. Just post your muscle pictures. Okay, what do I have next? Indy in Persia with D'Angelo interrupting. Which, you know, by this point, I'm already writing the parenthetical interrupts and just waiting to see what name to type because every single one got interrupted, like you said. This was just weird because I thought that D'Angelo was flirting with Indy, saying, like, well, I'm going to beat up your husband so bad next week because apparently they have a match. I guess, we saw a graphic for that, you know, that he's going to try to move in on the territory, as it were.
Yeah,
but
and
then,
he said, like, you'll be available or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you'll be free. Yeah, it was weird.
So I can't quite see what he's handing. And he's like, oh, this fell off the docks. And I'm like, all right, you're in Central Florida. Were you over at St. Pete? Or, like, what are we talking here, Tony? So he hands her something, and I'm like, did he crumple up a nice jacket and she's going to be impressed with it? Like, what is this thing? And I didn't realize until the close-up that it was a really gross-looking dead fish. So I guess he sort of, like, didn't do a good job with delivering the sleep with the fishes message, and it was just bizarre that he was flirting with her and then saying, I'm going to murder your boyfriend next week. So an odd tightrope walk that they're still doing with exactly what they are implying D'Angelo's character does in his free time.
Well, it's a straight reference to Luca Brasi in
right.
The Godfather, but
another
I
wrestler.
Think they
the
think...
zebra, right?
Oh, God, yes.
Yep.
But I think they think that movie was more recent than it was. I don't know. It's like 48 years old or whatever. And like, so when he, this character who was literally just ripped from the movie, he hands the newspaper. I'm like, I already know what this is. It's just, it's so broad. I love this actor. I hate this act. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, next week he's going to say, you know, he's going to make someone an offer they can't refuse. And when they say, well, what is it? He's going to be like, oh, I don't have anything. That's just like a thing that I was, just a thing that I say. I didn't really think about what it was supposed to mean. What
maybe
was he?
We'll
oh, Kyle O'Reilly.
He'll get gunned down in a toll booth.
What have they done to my boy? Kyle O'Reilly, that's where I'm at. I am glad that they acknowledged that foot on the ropes, because how stupid did Kyle look last week, looking like, oh, man, I have trust issues again, after Wagner got pinned when he clearly had his foot on the rope. So I'm glad that they don't seem to immediately be leaping to that distrust bit. And you know what? I'm just going to throw it in there, because Trick Williams, why do I keep doing that? Wait, is it Trick Williams?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it right. And then I second guessed
myself. It is Trick Williams.
Every time I write that, I feel like I'm getting the last name wrong for some reason. Well, anyway, I'll get it eventually. You know, basically rolls into the talk about the main event, but I thought Trick was really, really good in his little bit, interrupting Pete Dunne's interview. He's just awesome when he's talking. So good for him.
Nate.
All right, there's only a couple segments I really have anything to talk about, and there's really not even much that you guys haven't said. So I guess MSK, I'll start with them. This segment, and even the ones last week too, just they're not hitting with me. And usually, like, the weird stoner humor, like, I can at least chuckle at, but this is just like just too blatant. It's too lowbrow. Even for me, and that's saying something. It doesn't really work. I'm not really sure how they're trying to portray these characters. Like, I mean, I get it. They're stoners, whatever, but I don't know. I just don't feel like it's doing anything positive for them. I'm not saying that you can't have a stoner that's in a great position or whatever. I mean, hey, look, you had RVD, right? Although I guess that doesn't really
work. I was just going to say, who are they going to see, and is it going to be as obvious as, you know, WWE just paid RVD to film a little thing with Jeremy Borash real quick?
Right. Oh, hey, you know what? And if it led to something with RVD like it did with Ted DiBiase, I'd be okay with that. I don't know. I like RVD. That's just me.
Terrible. Go on.
You're terrible.
I'm absolutely not. Nobody ever in the history of oh, my God. His offense, man. Go ahead.
Anyway, no, he's not certainly not one of my favorites, but I do like RVD. I don't remember what the hell it was. Oh, yeah, so MSK. The segment's not really hitting with me, but, you know, whatever is what it is. Andre Chase, these segments, though, these are starting to hit me much, much more than they did at first. First when it was just like Andre Chase showing up, did somebody say Chase? Like, that was cool. That was kind of funny. But, you know, he's still kind of sort of doing that, but with the addition of, like, just whole breaking out and like flipping out at least like once per segment he's on TV. I'm interested by this. It's a little intriguing. I don't know where it's going to go. I kind of feel like this has a massive ceiling on it. But you know, it's interesting. It's weird and kind of intrigued by it. The only other thing I really wanted to touch on was Von Wagner and KOR. Kyle O'Reilly, like you, Kelly, I think it was you that said this a bit ago, like, you know, a few months ago, he was lying in bed thinking, hey, I'll probably be the next NXT champ. And now, like, he's doing stuff like this. And, you know, fine, he's kind of taking somebody that's, you know, newer and giving them a bit of a rub and whatever. But I don't know. I feel like he could be doing something a bit, you know, more, just a bit better, a bit more, like, just substantial than a tag team here. The segment where, you know, he was like, yeah, should I be a singles competitor or be a tag team competitor? It just seemed so, like, who the hell talks like that? Like, it's just really strange. Like, I get it. You've got to kind of convey what you're thinking in TV. So, you know, because, you know, people aren't mind readers, right? But just the way it came across was just really bizarre, weird. I didn't like it. Bad acting.
I'd put it more on the writer. Like,
well,
writing exposition, yeah, like that, there's always – I know wrestling's a different beast, and we're not aiming super high, but
– but still, aim a little higher.
If a character has to write his thoughts, then you've missed the story somehow.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, but yeah, that's really all I got to say on these other segments. Everything else you guys kind of already touched on is just kind of be me flapping my gums.
I'm Kelly Wells, and the center of the wrestling universe this coming weekend will be Minneapolis, which I had forgotten because I don't pay attention to where things are. But Wade Keller just told me today, hey, man, you're going to Rampage and Full Gear with me. So I'm going to those shows on Friday and Saturday. Just free media tickets. Love it. And so there you go. I will be doing that. Don't know if I'll be covering those, but I will be at those shows. So that's going to be, I should probably find out what's going on in AEW before those shows happen. But you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or spookymilk.games. Nate, who are you?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, which already up on the website for you guys to check out if you would like to do so. And you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg.
Tom.
At Tom Staupe, having a very difficult time withholding jabs at the experience that you are just going to have to endure in the coming days. Having a hard time. Hope you make it out. At least you don't have to give that company any money. But after I've been a jackass about things like that and all of that, you can give me money by going to my Patreon. No, it's a horrible opportunity for a plug. I will just say that Maybe you mentioned it when my computer was acting up, but Kelly and I appeared on Grit and Glitter, which does still exist in case you weren't aware, as its own entity now. We appeared on a podcast game show version of the Newlyweds Game, and we had a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I didn't realize what my computer was doing to me at the time, and my audio is atrocious on it. But I think, you know, it's still fun. So check out Grit and Glitter to see how well Kelly and I did against the other teams, one of Grit and Glitter's own, and then one from Bell to Bells on Grit and Glitter.
Yeah, absolutely see that. It was us, and then the Grit and Glitter team, known each other almost as long as Tom and I have, tight-knit community there. And then the other team was an actually engaged pair, a guy and a girl who are engaged. So you wouldn't think that Tom and I were by far the ones who got along best, the only ones who got along. but it seemed like other teams have issues to work through. But with that was a great time on Grit and Glitter, and I hope we get to do it again, and we probably will. I'm not spoiling anything, am I? I'm Kelly Wells, and we'll see you about a week from now. Cheers.